Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and this week's program will take a look at the most important events of 2018. Here's what we have for you today. 2018 Review. Trump makes his mark. Embattled U.S. President Donald Trump indelibly made his mark on domestic and foreign affairs this past year, doing everything from waging a trade war to stopping a migrant caravan and pulling out of Syria. 2018 Review. Europe yearns for a sense of direction. Previously regarded as having a generally agreed-upon sense of direction, the EU is more divided than ever before, after populist sentiment swept across the continent and challenged the ruling Euro-liberals. And also, 2018 Review, Managing Peace in the Mideast. After another year of bloody warfare in Syria and Yemen, the two countries finally appear to be on the path to peace, which is happening against the backdrop of Trump's promised deal of the century. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is Trump's second unforgettable year in office. Embattled U.S. President Donald Trump indelibly made his mark on domestic and foreign affairs this past year, doing everything from waging a trade war to stopping a migrant caravan and pulling out of Syria. The global economy was on pins and needles for the second half of 2018 after the president imposed hundreds of billions of dollars worth of tariffs on Chinese imports, which prompted the People's Republic to take reciprocal measures in a rapidly escalating series of tits-for-tats that dramatically culminated in a so-called ceasefire being agreed to during the recent G20 summit between their two leaders. While he was busy tariffing Chinese imports into his country, Trump also had his hands full trying to stop the migrant caravan from crossing into it as well. He ordered the military to strengthen America's border fortifications, but his promised wall has yet to be built, and his uncompromising stance over this issue was responsible for the recent government shutdown. Partisan politics are heating up, and Trump is bracing himself for the consequences of a Democrat-controlled House next year, which will likely hinder the implementation of his agenda even more than it already was. The Russiagate conspiracy theory fizzled out near the end of the year, but could always come back with a vengeance if the Democrats desperately weaponize it as part of their ongoing 2020 campaign, provided, of course, that they think that the American public would be receptive to it. Apart from dealing with his public political foes, Trump is also facing more pronounced deep state pressure than ever before following the resignation of Defense Secretary James Mattis in response to the U.S.'s surprise withdrawal from Syria, which exposed a serious rift between the executive branch and the military. Altogether, 2018 was a monumental year for Trump because he was finally able to shape events all across the board in an impactful way after struggling to get a hang of things during the first year of his presidency. The opposition to him and his policies, both from his internal rivals and those abroad, has never been stronger, but he's nevertheless gradually making progress on implementing part of his agenda, even if next year we'll see him curb some of his domestic ambitions because of the Democrat-controlled House. That said, Trump will probably focus more on international affairs in response. But I'm very pleased to announce we'll be speaking for the duration of this entire program with Mr. David Hungerford. He is a veteran grassroots activist and self-taught Marxist economist. David, I am so happy to have you on this super important edition of Trendstorm. Welcome.
Trendstorm.
Okay, David, the 90-day so-called ceasefire in Trump's trade war will end early next year, but there's still a lot for the U.S. and China to agree upon in order to put an end to their economic hostilities. So how do you foresee this unfolding in the coming months, and how optimistic are you that a real deal can be reached?
That question covers a great deal of ground. We have to look into, some background here. There's a huge trade imbalance between the United States and China. Typically, the United States might sell China on $150 billion worth of goods and buy $500 billion worth of goods. So for the U.S., that is a $350 billion deficit. Now, U.S. GDP, China's GDP is, or, you know, the best estimates I would say is it's about 60% of the United States GDP. And, you know, if you keep in mind that China has four times the population of the United States, and, you know, at that rate means that its GDP per capita is around 15% of United States GDP per capita. So what I'm saying that in this relationship is that economically the United States is very much the stronger party and has that going for it. So given, you know, if we think about the figures that I just gave for trade, you add it up both ways, it's $650 billion annually. Well, what about just straightening it out so it's $325 billion going in each way? You know, that's not terribly unreasonable thing to try. I think that, you know, given these very basic kinds of relationships, that the likelihood that the United States will get something to its satisfaction is very strong, you know, in terms of that relationship. But guess what? That's not all there is to it. Mm-hmm. The United States generally for many years has run a huge trade imbalance. China is just, you know, just the biggest partner of those imbalances. We run big imbalances with Japan, with the European Union, particularly Germany. Why should the United States continue to do that?
It's a good point.
It's clearly a matter of policy.
Well, you know, if we're going to talk about policy, David, I'd like to ask you about something else that really came to define the last year of Trump's term in office, and that's his border wall. I mean, he's going to have some severe difficulty building his promised wall and enhancing America's border security because of the Democratic-controlled House. So, David, what workarounds could he rely upon to make progress on this front, which is so important for his supporters ahead of the 2020 election, and how important will his relationship with Mexican President AMLO be in this respect?
Well, we can rule out AMLO's cooperation. Lopez Obrador, that is. I forget the first two initials.
Andres Manuel.
He has said that Mexico would cooperate with the United States and jointly build the wall as long as the wall conforms to the border of previous to the 1848 Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo that gave, you know, the whole Southwest to the United States. So he said he'll cooperate as long as we give the Southwest back to Mexico. So that's not going to happen. But as far as, you know, workarounds go, you know, I think what would be looking at, you know, what would be satisfactory, I think, you know, from people's point of view, I would say, is to look at the reasons why we have this problem of illegal immigration and people crossing the border covertly. Well, the problem is that the U.S. policies, which are very destructive, the living standards of people in Latin America and Central America, the NAFTA treaty destroyed the livelihoods of millions and millions of Mexican small farmers who could simply not compete with the big U.S. agribusiness companies. They would, you know, they just had their whole living cut out from under their feet. So they emigrate to the United States out of desperation. The United Fruit Company has all of the good agricultural land in Honduras. They pushed all of the local farmers off the land. And when the Honduras had a president who tried to do something about it in 2009, the United States sponsored a coup that got rid of him. So, you know, I think that really, you know, what should the genuine grassroots people's forces be doing? I think that, you know, as an activist and so forth and other grassroots progressives, we need to be raising that issue of United States policy that is so destructive because, you know, a wall, it's just an afterthought. It's a patch on a basic problem that only perpetuates the problem. And, you know, I don't think that Trump has, you know, as far as his workarounds go, now he has threatened that he will force a government shutdown if the funding bill upcoming does not include money for the wall. Is he bluffing? I don't think so, but we'll just have to see.
Trendstorm.
Okay, well, you know, one of the other challenges then that Trump will face from the Democratic-controlled House is how his increasingly hostile relationship with the Democrats will shape the dynamics of the 2020 campaign. I mean, this has already begun. I mean, obviously, ever since they had the midterms, the day after the 2020 campaign began. So how is the Trump versus Democratic dynamic going to shape the upcoming election in 2 years' time?
It'll get more poisonous and more poisonous. At the root of it is the fact that the Democrats criminally politicized the police powers of the FBI, and I think the NSA, to influence the 2016 campaign. There was that notorious Steele dossier that was paid for by Democratic Party funds, and it was all hearsay, of course. British spy Steele called up people he knew in Moscow. He hadn't been in Russia for 20 years. So the dossier against Trump was totally hearsay, and yet it was used as the investigatory predicate, the initial grounds to open up an FBI investigation and get a spy warrant on a minor figure in the Trump campaign, Carter Page. But, you know, minor figure, well, the point of principle is here they're putting a spy in the Trump campaign. They're totally violating all legality. Even the judiciary is involved because judges were accepting hearsay evidence to grant this pig's a warrant against Carter Page. So there are these very, very deep issues of misconduct that the Democrats are desperate to avoid any sort of prosecution around that. So that's not going to go away. And, I think the prospect is very strong that the relations will continue to be increasingly contentious.
Okay, David, this is all very interesting. Now, I mean, if we can go back to the whole Russiagate conspiracy, I mean, do you think that this will once again be played as the Democrats' proverbial ace up their sleeve? I mean, we see that it's pretty much fizzled out over the past year. Americans don't seem to be buying it. I mean, despite the Democrats winning the House, that seems to have been in alignment with typical anti-incumbency trends during the midterm. So, I mean, do you think that the Democrats will try to play that that card again, the Russiagate card, or will they let it fizzle out? I mean, what can we expect on that front?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I read the New York Times. The New York Times is continuing to play Russiagate. I think they've kind of hit the tar baby. You know, they smacked the tar baby, and now they can't turn it loose. For them to admit that it's been a fraud all along is, very damaging. So they'll have to sort of formally keep it up, I think. But they're looking for other issues for impeachment. You know, they're claiming something about an emoluments clause that Trump has not separated his role as president from his business interests and so forth. And the exposure is it's sort of a one strike and you're out situation. We've already seen that they, with Russiagate, that they started out with the goal of impeachment, and then they sought a pretext on which to bring articles of impeachment. And that's the other way, that's getting it the wrong way around. The way it's supposed to work constitutionally, if it's evidence of a crime, and that means real evidence, pops up, and it turns out the president has been guilty of that, then you can seek impeachment. Now, the never-Trumpers have turned that around. First, they're looking for grounds for impeachment, and, then they'll seek impeachment. They've reversed the constitutional order of things. They become increasingly exposed if they come up, the Russiagate failed. Well, we'll try something again. Well, how long can, like Lincoln said, you can't fool all the people all the time. So I don't see the Democrats stopping what they're doing, but, it's just not going to work, I think. It's too blatantly an assault, because if you try to overthrow a constitutional election by means of a lie, you've overthrown the Constitution itself. And I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to avoid being exposed for that.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I mean, you really brought up a great point about the whole unconstitutionality of the Russiagate hoax. Now, I mean, I think whether it's Russiagate or whatever else might be going on behind the scenes, we can pretty much agree that there is a huge deep state rift in the United States right now. Now, what I'd like to ask you as our concluding question, David, is how serious you think this rift is when it comes to the president and the military following Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria? And furthermore, in what ways could this emerging fault line influencing his foreign policy? especially in regards to Afghanistan.
Yes, I think there's considerable evidence that the military has been turned loose because, you know, it's due to this rift between the deep state and the constitutional state, that the military has been turned loose to a very considerable extent from constitutional civilian control. For instance, I think the missile attack on Syria in April of 2017 that, you know, really sent Trump's Syria policy at that time south, you know, there's a lot of reason to think that Trump didn't order it. And there's been other indications, too. So there's that problem. There's, you know, the continuing negative effects of the division between the deep state and the constitutional state. But on the positive side, a great factor, and the thing that I think Trump fully knows how to work for him, is that the people want peace. He announced his decision to withdraw Syria, troops from Syria, in a 6 a.m. tweet. He didn't tell anybody. He just put this tweet out there. And that meant that, you know, he'd avoided all of the deep state because the deep state, mainstream media is part of the deep state. They're constantly putting forth its lines. And he got around all of the national security objections and all that nonsense. 50 million people saw what his order before they had time to react to it. So Trump was counting there on the fact that the people want peace. And you know, that's a factor that, hopefully is going to play a very, very large part here. Let's just watch and see how that works.
Okay, David, it was so important how you brought up the deep state rift and how we have this division between them and the constitutional state on top of that, adding yet another layer of intrigue to understanding events under Trump's presidency. Also, I really appreciated how you concluded on a somewhat optimistic note by emphasizing how Trump is counting on the people wanting peace. That's very, very important because with everything that we spoke about, be it the Democrats, Russiagate, deep state, and everything else going on, at the end of the day, Trump's base of support is the people. And if he loses that, he loses everything. So thanks again for coming onto our program. Now, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.